And we'd also like to welcome two new members, the Polish Power Exchange. Welcome to the AMA. And then the GMEX group is also a new member, so welcome. Pakistan Mercantile Exchange was upgraded as to a full member status. JFX also indicated they will be going the same route. And then I'm glad to say Christian from Malawi decided last night he would also be going the full membership route. So well done.
All right. All right. All right.
In terms of the board members, just so that everyone's on the same page, I guess we thought I'd run through the Alan Gritshausen. Remains on the board. We have Paul, who's going to be taking over the MC duties a bit later and running with the next panel, who's also on the board. Myself, we have Otto Nogali, who will also remain on the board, and then some new members, Dean Lucas from JFX, and Karoli, welcome as well, another board member. And then, naturally, McGann will take over as chairman of AFM, as host.
Right.
So, McGann, welcome and enjoy.
Thank you.
And not that we want to forget much about Bali, but starting to plan towards next year, we're also very happy to say that the Polish Power Exchange have put up their hand and we'll be moving to Poland next year. It will most likely be in April. Some people are complaining about cold weather, I don't know why, but in this time of year, so we'll be moving it out slightly, but those dates will be distributed in due course. So thank you very much to the Polish Power Exchange. Correct. But in terms of the membership, Michael's just pointing out, it's the Warsaw Exchange Group, but I guess we look to the member in the Polish Power Exchange. And then some random points, because you'll see the program says a recap of the messages of day one. I know all of you were here. You sat through yesterday, well done. And I think Paul is very impressed with the turnout this morning. Paul normally does the next day after the gala dinner and he's always disappointed, but this is a really good turnout, so well done. But in terms of some random points that came out or messages, these are really random as we go through, but the point was made about demographics really matter, was the point. And everyone, yes, Michael. I think the audience is getting worried about the how long I'm going to carry on throwing out random points. But certainly the points about demographics really help. There was Nico made the point about the Indonesian community training on feelings, and I think that is something that is across the world. There's players out there who repeatedly react and trade on a feeling, on an emotion. Then an interesting one was that the Belgians are born with a brick in their stomach. I thought that was interesting, this passion for property. And then McGann made the point about, and really appreciated this one, that AFM membership fees are cheaper than a consultant.
Yep.
So bear that in mind, and certainly saw some value in that one. Smaller exchanges can adapt quicker. There was also the point about exchanges should focus on becoming part of the value chain. And it's not just there to make a quick buck. It's really trying to integrate it throughout the system. And look to doing exchange deals where the local exchange maintains its independence, was another important point. And exchanges should not be there to purely provide government pleasure, but focus on adding value to the marketplace. Also, I thought another valuable point. So I'm going to stop since Michael has arrived. I'm going to hand over to Paul. If the rest of the panelists want to join us, and we'll kick off the day. Thank you. you very much. And I'm going to hand over to Paul to do the rest of the day. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris, and good morning, everybody. I think we're going to have a good day today. We're starting off with a lot of energy. Well, it's an energy panel. I hope there's a lot of energy. Thank you, Mike, for making it. Then we've got the media. Then we've got a topic that includes the words moral hazard, but it's not the media. We are talking about opportunities and challenges. So hopefully we'll all be here for the whole day and enjoy what is said to us and hopefully learn. And please, in all the panels, I know you'll all be invited to interact, because this is what makes this conference what it is. So, move on to my panel here, my esteemed panelists. We're going to talk today about what's probably in the context of this room a boutique topic, really. It's energy and energy exchanges. It's something that's very much a US stroke European event, but it's something that is spreading and growing on a global basis. And today we will hear a little bit about how Europe in best part of 15 years, how a market structure developed in Europe from almost nothing. We'll get a perspective on how, certainly in this part of Asia, how markets are probably going to develop. We'll hear also about what life is like for an energy exchange inside the umbrella of a financial exchange. We'll talk a bit about technology and how technology hopefully can work in tandem with the exchange operators to help improve liquidity. And we'll also hear about regulation and hopefully perhaps the beneficial impact of regulation and also the very important role of clearing in energy markets, albeit from a European perspective, but perhaps you can start drawing parallels. So without further ado, I'll ask the people on the panel just to say hello, and then we'll steam into the topics for discussion. Mike, if you want to just say hi.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
I don't know why I'm on this panel, but it's because of your parent. So I'll talk about energy and electricity in short order. And within Singapore, because it's such a small marketplace, obviously we do everything. And that includes running the spot electricity market, which has been in place for about 10 years. It's a hugely over-engineered grid, as you might expect in Singapore. But the thing that maybe we can expand on later is that we have been watching the European example quite closely. We think there are lessons that we can learn for what happens in Europe. There's a very strong analogy, I believe, that we can draw between what's happening in energy and electricity and what some of the topics yesterday, which is that this is a marketplace that is potentially regional. It is embedded very physically between, it goes across borders. And there are methods and ways of making sure that each jurisdiction, each country has complete sovereignty over its infrastructure, but still there's very close harmonization. And that leads to a greater social good, which is strong sovereignty, interconnection, but still overall things work very well and it's more stable, cheaper energy. So we can talk about that more later.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. Michael. It's Mike and Michael, everyone. So.
You said just a brief hello. So good morning, everyone. Michael Hirsch from Bank of Management Munich. Please accept my apologies for my casual wear. My luggage still has not arrived. So that's not the new German style here. I'm just bearing with the situation.
Hello, everybody. My name is Karol Matvai. I represent the Hungarian CCP, the Keller CCP. This is a very small CCP in the heart of the Central Europe. We provide a CCP service for the capital market players and the energy and natural gas players as well.
Good morning. My name is Irek Wazow. I represent Warsaw Stock Exchange Group and Polish Power Exchange. So the Warsaw Stock Exchange Group invites you to Poland the next year. The Polish Power Exchange is a member of the Warsaw Stock Exchange Group. But Polish Power Exchange was founded at the end of 1999. We are the only one licensed power exchange in Poland. Since February 2012, Polish Power Exchange has been a member of the Warsaw Stock Exchange Group. Warsaw Stock Exchange Group holds 100% of company shares. We are operate market for electricity, gas, property rights, and CO2, and emission allowances. We are international market because we have been running a market coupling in Sweden. Market coupling is maybe that way between Poland and Sweden in Europe. We have under Baltic Sea cable, so the price for Poland and Sweden is the same price for electricity. So that's the way I was mentioned. We are international exchange. For the beginning, is enough. Yes, Paul.
Thank you.
I'm Patrick Kenny. I'm from CQG. CQG is a data vendor, also an independent software vendor, an ISV. It's been around since 1980, so it's been around for 3-4 years. Same year I got into trading at the Chicago Board of Trade, where I was still a member. And happy to be here, and thanks very much again for the wine last night.
Big hit.
I think we can all echo that last sentiment. Just briefly, Paul Constantino, I work for Tradeport. We are a leading supplier of technology into the energy markets, primarily in Europe. But that doesn't mean I know anything about energy markets. I just know about technology in energy markets. We'll hear more about the markets themselves than these gentlemen on my head. So let's start off with a degree of a retrospective and hear how Europe has evolved. And it's a 15-year story, only 15 years. And I'll ask Michael to give us a potted history, if you like, and hopefully there'll be some relevance to what's going on, what's happening in Asia that you can reflect on.
Yes, thank you, Paul. So I would like to take you on a little journey going back, not even 15, but going back 25 years. What is happening in 15 years in the industry, in the markets? First of all, I think it's very important. We have a panel on energy, but let's please be careful and distinguish the global contracts or distinguish coal. Different story if we talk about gas or electricity. I think it's very important because the contracts are so different. Looking back and having a market that is evolving here, that is developing, maybe, or I'm sure there are lessons that we can see, but we will come to that later. Just spending a couple minutes on Western Europe and what happened there. And I'm talking about the electricity, the power trading now. So the whole thing started with the Scandinavian market, with Nord Pool back in 1990. And Nord Pool was the first exchange to sort out how the physical element of electricity could be traded, market balancing, price discovery. They put together Norway, Finland, and Sweden, and that was a very good thing. They organized to combine these three markets and started trading there, 1990. Liberalization in Germany and Western Europe, in UK, we're talking about the year 1999. I was a fairly active part of that period there. So what happened? Let's look at Germany. We had a Norwegian or a Nord Pool initiative starting in the city of Leipzig in Germany, together with their technology, with the system Sabri. They in line with this liberalization, they started to exchange activities and started to day-ahead market for the German power contracts together with the Germans. Besides that, we had Deutsche Börse Eurex at the same time to start activities and develop the market. We then had a decision from the Ministry of Economics in Germany that the task to set up the market was given to Deutsche Börse Eurex. We saw many initiatives, but very much OTC market. We worked together with brokers like GMI, Prebon, in the UK. They listed German contracts on their screens, so it was very much an OTC market, and they even had day contracts there. At the same time, we saw exchange initiatives, of course, in Poland, and I will not speak about that. In the Netherlands, exchanges coming up, in France, in Belgium. Later on, we had OMIP, the Spanish, the Portuguese market. So everywhere we had the initiatives to start trading and offering exchange business. So, but the interesting things, when the decision was made in Germany, basically what happened, the Nord Pool system that was taken to Germany to organize the day-ahead market, after the decision of the ministry, Deutsche Börse Eurex took over the initiative in Leipzig, talking about technology. The Xepra system was adapted to the very smart things that the Scandinavians had sorted out on how to trade day ahead. So you can do about this technology if you want to. We had initiatives, for example, for the Dutch and the Belgian market, the so-called market doubling. You had Deutsche Börse Eurex invest in Slovenia. They bought a major stake there, which then was taken back. They went out again after 2 or 3 years' time. So talking about many initiatives, talking about market development, talking about patience, what are some key messages from the development there? The EU was very eager to set up a combined market in that region by 2014-2015. So now we are facing 15 years of liberalization of that market, and the question is, where are we now? We just started this year. There was a market coupling mechanism, the so-called Northwestern Europe, NWE, that is just about to start functioning now. A lot of topics, a lot of questions come up from strategy-wise. You have the big three C's. Look at cost, look at customer, and look at competition. But what we see here in the last 15 years, what was happening there, is basically just the fact that you need to be patient. You can penetrate things, you can be very eager to achieve things, but it's not only up to you. So that's certainly one key message that we can find. Electricity is very much... you talk about the transmissions, you have the political efforts, you have the system operators, you have the exchange initiatives, so you have a whole number of players that are influencing things that need to be in the right place that the market functions. And we are talking about an area, if we think back to the landscape of Indonesia, we are talking here about 2,000 times 3,000 kilometers in this area, so many things happen and are still under development, and I think that's very interesting, and we can learn from that.
Thanks, Michael. I think it's an interesting point that, I don't know if many of you are aware, that in Europe, you can be sitting in Southeast Europe and buy electricity that's actually generated in Northwest Europe, and it's transmitted through a series of interconnectors across the continent. Some of those are overhead cables, a lot of those are undersea cables. Whether there's any feasibility for that to happen in Asia is something, on a broad basis at least, is something that we'll see. But I know, and Mike in a moment might be able to tell us, but I know there's some connectivity between countries in proximity to each other already here. The other point about Europe is that there is there's a split almost between the way the spot market is traded and the way the forward market is traded. Pretty much with the exception of the Nordic countries for historic and technical reasons, most of the rest of Europe, the forward market is pretty much traded OTC, but the spot markets are on exchange. And I think it's a factor here of in Europe, with regulation, there's no fear of OTC trading supporting a critical asset like electricity and indeed gas and coal. So something to think about. Mike, what is going on now in particularly if we consider Singapore to be a little harder, and perhaps how the power and gas markets might evolve? What's your view?
Okay, so the brief history of this is probably about 10 years ago, there was a four-hour blackout in Singapore, which, as you know, is the end of the world in Singapore, the definition goes off. And the thinking back then was that because there was a 30-year gas supply contract with Indonesia at between 20 and 30 dollars per BTU, that's very high price, by the way, so Henry Hub trades at $4 or $5. The idea was that if you have a long-term supply contract through a government-sponsored pipe, you have energy security. But what happened was an operational failure. Some equipment failed to work. There was a blackout. And a lot of thinking went into what is the meaning of security of energy for modern society. And a move was put in place to do two things, obviously on the supply side and demand side. First of all, to try and make sure that people use electricity efficiently. In other words, when you consume it, there is a market price for it. So a grid was built in Singapore to price electricity. There is something like 400 nodes in this grid, which is way too many for a small island. In Singapore, inside, you probably need four. But that market's been running for a while because electricity is not storable, because there's intraday peaks and lows. This is a market that runs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So on the demand side, the intention in Singapore, and I believe this will spread elsewhere across Asia, is to say, are there users like retail for whom you want to have perhaps a more stable and not heavily contested price? And then are there users like industry for whom a 5% change in the price of electricity might make them decide, okay, I want to close my factory here, I want to move it to Bintan, I want to move it to Malaysia. So one is contestable, one is not contestable, and Singapore in the long run had to make a very big distinction between what is retail and not movable and what is merely industry, because in the long run I don't think that would be intended in Singapore. There is in fact interconnection between Singapore and Malaysia. As a matter of public record, I think YTL, which is a Malaysian Genco company, owns, they did declare that over the last Malaysian elections they purchased 2 days' worth of electricity forward from Singapore. That's a typical example. Just in case something happens over an event, you want to make sure there's a flow of electricity. There is, of course, interconnection in the gas network between Indonesia and Singapore. But part of the driver of the decision in 2004 was a recognition that Indonesia, in the medium term, is no longer going to be a net exporter of energy. Indonesia can definitely consume all the coal it produces, all the gas it produces, and over some period of time there will have to be a renegotiation because energy patterns change. So if we take it to the bigger picture of what's happened in Europe, I guess the lessons that certainly we have learned is a handful of things. One, if you have a marketplace of some sort that's connected across a region, you tend to have more stable, more resilient power supply. Second one is that for this to happen, you need top-down political pressure, harmonization, for instance, at the EC level. Thirdly, don't believe people who tell you that gas supplies are somehow different from other kinds of marketplaces, right? I mean, if you asked someone at Gazprom 5 years ago, will there be a gas market? They would have said, not in my lifetime. But here, 5 years later, the thing is a molecule of gas is just a molecule. You can't trace it back to someone else. When there's a gas glut, people will find a way to trade it. So that market is liberalizing by itself, and we believe the same will probably happen in the region. And the final thing is that if you are able to achieve all these things, the purpose of efficiency, the purpose of energy security is actually met better because you have a diversity of supply. So it starts in a very small area, which is the electricity demands of Singapore, which are really not big in the scheme of things. But I believe that the thinking around the very tight coupling between gas and electricity is even more acute in Asia than in Europe, because in Europe, gas is mainly used for heating. It's not as closely coupled to electricity. Whereas in Asia, gas is electricity, or oil is electricity. So those two markets must also be very closely coupled. And these are big government-to-government type decisions. And with the gas flood that's coming, there's a lot of gas in the Pacific Basin, there's a huge gas glut in Europe, and there's a lot of shale gas coming out of the US potentially. That will lead to liberalization because molecules cannot be restrained. They will be free trade.
Thanks for that, Mike. Just at this point, it's one of the first times I've heard a degree of detail about Asia. I'm probably too Eurocentric for my own good sometimes. But is there anyone out there, any of you, got any comments or indeed any questions so far, particularly on what we've just heard from Mike? Well, okay. If you do have any questions, stick your hand up. We welcome it. Let's move ahead. I'll move now to Irek to get a perspective, a Polish view, but not just the Polish market per se, but perhaps a little bit about how it is that an energy exchange can now operate in a group that's by a large regional financial exchange. I think it's an interesting perspective.
Thanks for. Yes, of course, I would like to say something about the merger Polish Power Exchange and the Warsaw Stock Exchange. But if I may add something to the European electricity market picture for the big break. So, regarding the forward contracts and trading, forward trading contracts, in Poland, we are a little bit different case because 2013 it was the best year for trading electricity in Poland. So on a forward contract, it was 176 terawatt hours. Of course, for you it means nothing, but the main point is only 22 terawatt hours. So it's a, let's say, day ahead transaction. Day ahead transaction means in the spot market. Our forward contract is the main activity for our members. Our forward contracts, we set them by physical number. So the forward contracts in Poland, it's not on ECBs, it's exactly exchange, power exchange business. So it depends on what. The main factor is transparency, and of course it's a
gas.
It's a business for traders, which do the more active trading in exchange. Because OTC market, let's say, I'm sorry for that, is something kind of not transparent market. It's the one comment. The second, in Europe, you know, it's a lot of European members, the 28 countries. So it's a small market, and now we are going to create one electricity market in Europe. The deadline for that is January started in 2015. But what are we talking about? What is the one electricity market in Europe? What does it mean? Of course, we could create the one electricity market if we could, if we have enough connection between the countries. For example, Poland and Germany is a neighbor country. Our border is not working because there's a lot of the wind farm on the north, or then the Germany needs energy on the south part of Germany. But of course, energy flows using the physical way. So the energy from the north to south part of Germany flows via Poland, Czech Republic. Yes, so in this case, the border is not well connected. So
in 72 hours,
the flows between Poland and Germany is limited, very, very strong. So, of course, we are talking about the one electricity market, but in my opinion, we are still concentrating on the domestic market. Okay, so let me talk about the advantages and some challenges. After the merger with Warsaw Stock Exchange, of course, I see some advantages like the business synergies, legal advantages, organizational advantages, marketing advantages. Of course, it's some challenges. Business synergy. You know, for example, now we try to open physical financial products. So, of course, it's big advantage to use, let's say, knowledge from the Warsaw Stock Exchange. So, so it's a big advantages for us to. The legal advantages, the Warsaw Stock Exchange is a very, very strong name in Poland, but the electricity market is so regulated, we are under control to authorities. One is the financial. The second is the energy. So, for example, in electricity market, in 2013, via exchange, flows more than 100% electricity consumption in Poland. Why? One of is not the main reason, but one of the reasons is, you know, we have the let's say legal obligation for a member. So it means that the members must trade 15% of transaction via exchange. So of course it's create for the beginning some volume. So the business is so the electricity business in Europe, in Poland. It's so regulated business, so let's say using a Warsaw Stock Exchange name, it helps us to create very nice regulation for a business. Organizational advantages is a lot of cooperation teams and as well as using the mechanism and solution of the Warsaw Stock Exchange group. Marketing, well, our case, I mean the AFM next year meeting case is the best example. So, of course, Polish Power Exchange is a member of AFM, but the Warsaw Stock Exchange Group, let's say, is going to organize the meeting next year. So again, it's a great honor to have a challenge host you the next year. But of course, it's the same challenges. The Warsaw Stock Exchange is the listed company. It's the listed company. So as a result of the merger with the Warsaw Stock Exchange, Polish Power Exchange became the objective of interest of a wide circle of stockholders in Warsaw Stock Exchange. So Warsaw Stock Exchange, as I mentioned, is the listed company which is analyzed by the investor and some analysts. So it's not very comfortable situation for us, because quarter by quarter, investors and analysts looking for a, let's say, progressing on a result, on a Warsaw Stock Exchange Group result. So, well, for me personally, as a manager of the Polish Power Exchange, it's not good situation to looking to a quarterly, yearly result, and we could compete with many of the listed companies of the Warsaw Stock Exchange.
Thanks, Irek. So we've heard a lot about the structure of market, what goes on in the market, and I think when we talk about the market structure, we can't do this without referring in some way to clearing and to regulation. After all, Irek mentioned the need for transparency. The drivers in the markets now are to greater transparency, better quality of reporting, and indeed recent regulatory changes in Europe, for example, an introduction of a regime called EMIR, is forcing everybody to be prompt and clear in their reporting of transactions. But let me pass this on then to an expert in this field, to Caroline from Keller in Hungary, who we're quite lucky to have on the panel today an independent clearinghouse, which is quite a rarity these days. But over to Caroline to give us his view.
Thanks, Paul. I would like to continue the direct thoughts about the one European price zone, which is, I think, a very good idea from the European politicians, but I also a little bit skeptic with this idea. Why I'm a little bit skeptic with this idea? Because the infrastructure in Europe, I think, is very, very fragmented. Yesterday we talked about the Asian markets, and we talked about it that the Asian markets are very fragmented. I can tell you that the European markets are the same situation. Why I talk about this? Because 10 years ago, all of the European countries has one exchange, one clearing house, and one depository. After the MiFID regulation, which created, I think, a competition on the exchange level, we can see nowadays that there are same situation. We have 30 exchanges all over the Europe, but there are plus 100 MTF, which is registered in the European market, and we create some dark pools and other trading facilities, trading systems. So we create a much more complex market than worked 10 years ago. This is my point of view regarding the European markets. After the MiFID regulation, lots of American platforms established marketplaces in Europe and established daughter companies in Europe. Especially BTCC launched the new capital market play record Euro CCP, and also some new clearing houses coming into the picture, like PMCF. So these new entities started to compete with each other. The result is that the competition is just focused on the prices. So if you see the Dutch clearing prices 10 years ago, it was about 50 euro cent per trade. Nowadays, the clearing houses offer a clearing service for 5 to 10 euro cents per trade. So, which means that the competition really reduced the prices, create more fragmented markets than many, many years ago. And what is our thoughts regarding the price competition? We can continue the price competition with the near future, but after a few years, the clearing houses realized as cheap prices as possible. If we are not able to compete on the price level, we can continue the competition with the risk management tools and the risk profile. This will be create instability in Europe and create, I think, a headache for the European regulators, for the European Central Bank and the national banks of all over the European countries. So this is my my thoughts regarding this European fragmented market. I can tell some good news as well that the concentrates are started. We can see some mergers and acquisitions. For example, the Swiss SAS Xclear bought the Nordic Clearing, one of the Nordic Clearing House a few years ago, and EMCF and the EuroCCP is also merged in a few years ago, or a few months ago, sorry. If you look at the Central European, Central and Eastern European zone, we can see all, especially in the energy markets, we can see every country we can see an exchange and a clearing house as well. So in the region we also need consolidation, we also need less fragmentation. I think I can tell you that 2 years ago some new regulation came into the picture in Europe for DEMIR, which is trying to regulate European clearing houses, and the main aim of the this regulation was very good because the regulators would like to standardize the clearing houses profile, especially the risk profile. They create more liquidity for the clearing house level, create different kind of defense lines, and create new second segregation models for clearing houses. I think the idea of the EMIR is very good. Regulated the clearing houses, create the standardization in the clearing platform, but my opinion is that we need time to continue with the consolidation, especially in Europe, and especially in our region, in the Central European region as well.
Thank you, Caroline. Very comprehensive summary there. A lot of discussion then so far about structure and content. But we can't ignore the impact of technology and perhaps the beneficial impact of technology. I'll pass the microphone now on to Pat, who's been very patient, and he'll share his thoughts with us about how appropriate use of technology can perhaps benefit a market that is looking to build its liquidity.
Thank you, Paul. With major ISVs, not just talking about myself, they have become the solution for a lot of exchanges, emerging exchanges, to be their connectivity. Ourselves, we write to 52, 53 derivatives exchanges, and I think we write to over 125 exchanges from a multi-asset class. So that is our purpose, is to provide that technology to exchanges. That podcast brought about maybe some of the sentiments from the changes to ISVs to get right to our exchange. We'd be happy to help maybe on the monetary side of the cost of doing that and along that. Just throwing that out. Alternatively, the exchanges could simply use a trading platform that some of these ISVs offer to get immediate accessibility to a global trading audience. And what we provide is everything from FCMs to funds to small trading groups around the world. It's instant liquidity that is easy, accessible, and affordable. I'm not going to go too far down that line, and you know, keep going. It'll sound like a, I'm trying to promote maybe my company, so I won't do that.
You'll get a hook if you don't.
So I'll stop there for now. Let me go.
Okay. It's very generous by that, just stopping short of the plug. But it's not just the ISV. Well, one of the questions that is quite often raised, and my answer is always biased, is regarding platforms for energy markets. Is it right that, and my bias, the answer would be yes, that energy markets have specialist trading platforms? The exchanges and the OTC markets have specialist matching engines for energy trading, or can this be addressed using generic trading platforms? I've got a mic for that to see what Singapore have done, because Singapore Exchange has adopted and is running the electricity market company business for Singapore.
Okay, I'll give a few plugs to that. So, we have 9 generating companies in Singapore, which is, again, way too many generating companies for one island. They understand how to operate a marketplace for spot electricity, but as you know, electricity isn't storable. So when you want to trade or make a price on energy futures, that's a very different price. It doesn't work the way it does with financials, the way you just discount it. So bringing these generating companies into the world of futures trading has been a huge challenge. Some part of it is technology, and technology isn't just trading, it's everything all the way down to back office. How do you do your hedge accounting? How do you hit margins? How do you offset it against your input costs? In other words, your spark spread, which is, in order to generate electricity, I must consume some oil, consume some gas, and really what I'm trading is that spread. I'm not trading the outright price of electricity. So we've had to work closely with an ISP like CQG, which has a solution which is based more in the cloud, such that these generating companies, which aren't fundamentally technology companies when it comes to trading, they want a relatively easy-to-use solution which offers them the ability to trade, to link to their electricity prices, but also link to other kinds of contracts, gas contracts, oil contracts, and finally to make sure that their FCM supports the system well enough that it runs all the way through to clearing and accounting. So these challenges are things that exchanges have no choice but to engage in when you bring new people to the table. And when they start with the cloud-type solution. But when they get more advanced, so if you go to the other extreme of the really advanced traders, people like RWE or E.ON, when they land in Singapore, they've got world-class everything. They have their internal models, they have forecasts, and then they start using, bigger and more complex packages, and they would then want connectivity to their global portfolio. Because the guy might have gas in Spain, and he might want to do a trade in Singapore. And then he would need a much broader network of connectivity. So I think along the spectrum of technology solutions, there are solutions for everyone along that spectrum. And most of the Asian markets are still starting here. So there's a long runway for, I think, technology to play a role in connecting these markets.
I think that's a fair comment. It is quite interesting. My bias is that energy markets need, as they get sophisticated, I'll take that from mine, do need specialist platforms. Energy contracts, longer-term energy contracts, particularly electricity, particularly in the sense of risk management, are more complex than pure financial contracts. Michael Jess maybe might want to comment on that in a moment. But we certainly, from the Trayport perspective, have seen the sophistication and the need and the trading requirements of the large global players just grow and grow. And it's quite right that I mean, trading spreads is trading now. A screen that enables access to an entire global market is the requirement of the large groups. And it's something that everybody's striving to provide. Even now here in Asia, the market's getting more complex. There's a new gas market about to open up in Australia, in Eastern Australia, which will be not just domestic, it'll be exporting. And I think the impact of that market and the need for people to trade on that market, as well as perhaps the domestic Singapore market, will push traders towards the next generation of technology. So I think as the markets evolve, as they have evolved in Europe and as they will evolve in other centres like Asia, I think that the move towards more sophistication is something that cannot be held back. It's going to happen, and technology then is the key. Anyone want to add something there?
Yes. You can do a lot with technology, and I think what we have to value here is just the wide range of problems we have. The most active and the most biggest companies, they might have technology issue. But coming back to my upfront speech, we are facing still a lot of other struggles. So I would just like to set my point on that. We look at such a wide range of development, and I don't think in Europe right now technology is the biggest obstacle to the development of the market. So just to put that in the right place here, of what we are talking about, I mean, on the benchmark, of course, you have technology issues, but getting the physical stuff right, to me, is a far bigger challenge right now. Another point, if you guys want to comment on technology, I don't want to disturb that topic, but just what bothers me, I talked about the 50-year history, and we're all thinking about what can you do right and what can go wrong, and if you look at all the investments that have taken place here, And my answer to doing things better than others, what is the answer to that? I think we cannot prevent evolving markets from spending a lot of money. And for me personally, I just accepted the fact that this is how it works. And you have some stranded investments, and there's no way around. It's just got to happen. You have domestic initiatives, you have some regional things, people are going out there doing their best every day, and that's just a matter of fact, it's just how the scenery is, so it will always happen in every region and on every continent, nothing to do about that, but maybe you want to go back to technology.
The only thing I was going to add to it, it kind of brings up the whole aspect of the training, the education. Besides the technology, the fundamentals. And that's, again, something that you can offer from the Central Asian markets and that type of idea, maybe get people to participate in and trade in a Central Asian market and learn how to trade those products and actually watch a chart. That's kind of the next step. Creating more liquidity is the education.
I think that's a fair comment. Very often now at Trayport, we go to a new market, and perhaps a new market, even in Europe, where it's just happened in Romania. It's applied for Trayport. Next Monday, I get confused with all these time zones, but next Monday, the Romanian market, electricity market, goes live on our platform. It's a little But in the build-up to going live, as well as having testing of connectivity, end-to-end user testing, etc., the exchange has asked us, and we have provided them with resources from within our organisation to go with them to their key members, to the members' trainers, to the active participants, the will be active participants, and share with them how the system works and how they can get good value out of their usage of it. And this level of education is something we see almost everywhere when we open a new market. 6 years ago, we opened the gas market in Denmark, and we were categorically told this market will not go live until we have convinced what has been previously telephone traders on the value and benefit of screen trading, and please help us. And it's fundamental that to grow the liquidity does need member education, not just at the level that Pat was alluding to, which is perhaps growing from the ground up in trading the type of contract, but also in actually understanding how to get the best out of the screens that are going to be put in front of you.
Yes, I agree with you, Paul. Education and technology is the basic, the fundamental for gas and electricity trading. But anyway, the electricity and gas trading is another rocket science. It's easy as that. But I see two different words anywhere. So the one word is financial futures products based on the gas and electricity. That part of business absolutely, in my opinion, follow the financial exchanges. And the second part is the spot gas and electricity. But the spot and gas electricity market, well, it's some kind of a complicated market. The reason for this is the capacity between a lot of countries and inside the country. For example, Sweden is the 11 price zones. So the spot market is so complicated market anyway. Is the one. The second is the big difference between the gas spot and electricity spot. The gas is a very, very clear market. What I mean? I give you an example in electricity. You know, in Europe, now we are concentrated on the environment. So we are looking for green energy based on the wind farms, solars, a lot of new technology. And of course, this part of energy, in my opinion, influences the price of energy. If you're looking for electricity prices, it's a lot of components. Of course, it's a pure electricity price. We must add capacity, we must add transportation, and we pay a lot of money for green energy. So, the spot electricity market, we must understand what's going on. We have to look for green energy, transportation, capacity between the price zones.
Thanks, Eric. Ladies and gentlemen, we've heard a lot. Has anyone got any question? Please, one at the back.
What is needed in place to have a viable electricity market. As I understand, there should be a separation between generation and distribution. Yeah. How many generators are needed? How many distributors are needed for a viable market in electricity? And in the clearing stage, what is needed to monitor the delivery of the electricity? It's a very basic question, I'm sorry. I'm not really familiar with the electricity market.
That question's not so basic, Lucas. Please don't be too humble. I think it's a very, very valid question. Let's go to Michael first.
Well, when we started the liberalization process in Germany, just to give an example, we had four major generators, and there was a lot of criticism for many years that this is a kind of monopoly game. So it's a bit hard to answer your question. The Nordic market, after it was developed for 5 to 10 years, it had about 320 participants. So that's probably what you call a balanced field of actors in that sphere. Coming back to Germany with the four generators and talking about how to set up, these guys, they are the experts on how to build a market. What you do need is a system that covers the different areas of the different grid owners, for example, because if you have a problem in transporting in the transmission and you need to cut off, let's say, the northern part of Germany and then you don't have electricity flowing, then you need to make sure that you still find your day ahead market balancing price. So that's some part of the tricky game of what is needed technique-wise to come up to a result and that you really are able to deliver or to receive energy the next day. But that's only, 0.1% of the logic in there. I don't know how deep we want to get into that.
Yes, I see the 3 points. The first is the technology, the second is the products, and the third is the marketing. And PR. Now we have 69 members, but the structure of the members is follows. It's the sub generators. It's the five generators, five distribution companies, four brokerage houses, and the rest is the traders. It's the traders on the two meaning. One is they operate on day-ahead market, so it means they close position during the settlement period. And the second meaning is they trade the forward contracts. So our forward contract is 2 weeks, quarterly, monthly, and yearly contract. So they would like to close the position between before forwards contract is going to expire.
Lucas, I would like to answer for your question regarding how the clearing house monitor the delivery of the electricity or natural gas. The answer is we don't have any responsibility with this because after the clearing mechanism. In the midnight, the clearing house send all of the netted position to the national transmission system operator. This system operator is responsible for the physical delivery. So we are not able to monitor what's happened in line with the delivery. But if there are any default in the system, the transmission system operator has a balancing mechanism, has own generators, has own buying procedures, how to buy more electricity and how to create more electricity into the system. And if the transmission system operator realizes the default, they send an information to the clearing house and we pay compensation for the transmission system operator for the extra works, the extra electricity. This is the short answer.
That, that's certainly something we've seen, for example, in gas markets, where one of the key members of the gas market is the market manager, who is responsible for maintaining a balance in the market. If the market is out of balance, and if there's a member of the market who isn't fulfilling obligations, then the market manager can intervene, and as Carolyn said, there'd be penalties to be paid by the defaulting participant. So, how many generators do you need? You probably only need one. But you need more than one distributor, otherwise there's no market. How do you get there? It depends on the rate of deregulation. I'm not sure of the market structures here, but in some Asian centres. But when we look at countries that are deregulating and moving towards a free market structure, we're seeing a situation where a state monopoly begins to be broken up. That yes, of course, there is the transmission network, which can tend to stay state-owned, but generation is privatised. And we've seen this, for example, in Turkey, which is actually a bad example because they've got it wrong at the moment, but in Turkey they went through a process of selling off all the state-owned generation. Huge amounts of foreign investment went in there. From having a single owner of generation, there's probably 30 or 40 owners of generation now. There are other issues that need to be resolved there, but this is what's happened in Europe. I think in Germany there's probably a generation plant in every major town, which are all connected on the grid. So it is the rate with which deregulation occurs, and there'll be a point where there'll be enough participants at each level to validate, to justify the investment in creating a market.
That's probably the end state, a long time away for the experience in Asia. I think that maybe the two observations about our local markets, the question are these. One, that energy security is a much bigger issue here than it is in Europe. So energy security considerations will always be number one. Number two, the underlying transport infrastructure for many forms of energy are simply not here yet. So it's very easy to talk about end stage harmonization, but even the roads transport coal to a port, to ship it to a generation company, those things are not necessarily in place. So even in Europe still today, although quite harmonized, exists as a number of sort of energy islands. You know, Singapore, like Hungary, is a splendid energy island. Poland can route, you know, wind energy from north to south Germany, but within Poland there's a lot of coal from Silesia, and that's very closely linked to generating companies. There's biomass that's coming into your market. There's a mandate to trade renewables. These are not things which are very easy to deal with. So I think Kasara was saying that Thailand buys its energy from Myanmar because there's lots of hydro there. But Indonesia, which has lots of sources of energy, will probably still end up being a net importer of energy because of infrastructure considerations. So even though these countries are adjacent, they have very, very different security considerations. So it's very early, I think, to still talk about the separation of generation from retailing. I think that Gen Taylor, the totally integrated generation company, which also owns retailing, is here to stay. And particularly for Indonesia, where you have 17,000 islands, building connectors between islands is a big ambition. I mean, between Singapore and Bintan yet, we don't have an interconnector. So there's a long way to go. I think the market structure will be extremely complex. I think national energy security considerations will be number one.
Does that help you, Lucas?
Thank you.
Does anyone else have a question? Please, Duncan.
Hey. Again, a sort of beginner style question. Do you need to have this sort of infrastructure or well-performing spot market in order to have a futures market? Can you still have a futures market setting prices, which then may be used in some of the islands, for example? Or, you know, how much do you need to establish a highly functional spot market in order to have a futures market on there?
Yeah, maybe I can start off with that.
at least in our areas, there was always a standing rule which said about 20% on the spot market traded under a price discovery mechanism would furnish for setting up a financial contract on top of that. So, talking about Germany, the market when it started in 1999, the first target was to reach this 15 to 20% traded over spot exchange as a matter of having a solid underlying for a financial contract. In other areas, the solution to not reaching a substantial volume for financially settled derivative, like coming from the OTC, always had a critical forward business. In 99, in the year 2000, we had a lot of discussions with the tax guys to make an OTC contract, a physical contract, cleared through the exchange, and we gave that up. That was together with GMI. We were working on that project. Quite interesting. So, big issue about this, the physical, and when can you set up a derivative on top of that? That's some basic from my point of view. Maybe some other comments on that.
No one wants to comment on that. I think as long as you've got a benchmark price, where do you get that from? It has to come from some form of spot market. Mr. Meyer has a question. Beginner's question. It's a kind of market that's fascinating, yet it's very hard to comprehend. I love to push about the Gettys rules, but I don't know how it gets there. But a question that intrigues me is, it was mentioned before, as when you see it, it's mostly a spot market, not a forward market. And to me, it would seem, as a user of these tools, I would like to be interested in a long-term guarantee of getting these shoes. Why is it not the forward market that is so big rather than the spot market? Do I miss something?
I would argue actually that the forward market is huge in probably every energy asset class in the mature markets. Electricity is the unique one because of storage. But the other asset classes, of course, are storable. And consequently, you have possibly a more familiar market structure, more familiar that is with other commodities. Electricity is not that special, really. It's just that the spot market is an immediate situation, and hence it's a day ahead market, and hence there's a massive scheduling overhead. But the forward market is enormous. I forget the churn rate, but I think in most parts of Europe, a forward contract is probably retraded probably 5 times during its life. Something of that order, I think that's about right. But Mike, do you want to make a comment here?
Well, I mean, you are absolutely right, and this is a challenge that Asia in general faces, because that's why the price of energy is so high. The price of energy in Japan is immense, because it's linked to oil. So almost all of our energy needs, all of our energy pricing on a forward basis is either on very long-term contracts, or on floating contracts but linked to oil. So yes, there is a market, but it's the oil-linked market, and it's the oil-linked market at a premium. So JCC trades at $10 over Brent, and therefore the starting point is for the various markets to firstly have deregulation and liberalization in the ability to consume spot energy. When your electricity market isn't liberalized, it doesn't know what to do with a market price for energy. After that comes the market price, particularly for gas. And gas isn't liberalized yet. It's still an oil-linked market. So this is a long road ahead, but the driver, I think, of consciousness for this is probably the Fukushima accident in Japan. after which the security of supply situation for Japan and Korea has been particularly acute. And I think you will have seen from the IEA report that came out, I think, a year ago, that there's a general drive across Asia to say, how do we de-link ourselves from oil and pricing for Asia's energy needs?
No more hands going up, I take it we're pretty much done. Unless anyone else on the panel's got anything to add, I'd like to thank the panel. Okay, let's thank the panel. Thank you, Karen.